part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I went to see Star Wars again.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a second time.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice as well. Jay, you saw it twice, like in 24 hours, right?
Yep. I saw it at midnight, as is now, I guess, is going to be an annual tradition with me and my friends Jeremy and Bennett going to see the Star Wars movie at midnight. And then I saw it the following night at 9.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
That's cool. So we're all like double viewers by the time we even done.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's get started with this particular podcast. This is Part-Time Fanboy. I am Christian Horn. I am here with my friends Paul Edwards and Jay Holtham, and we are here to talk about a little prequel movie. I don't know, maybe people haven't heard about it. It's Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I guess we're here to talk about our reactions. This is sort of the Monday after release, so we are on top of it. What are some people's thoughts about the Star Wars movie that was basically made to explain a plot point flaw in A New Hope? I don't know. That's kind of the way I see it.
Was that a plot point flaw?
It's not a plot point flaw.
I don't know, they definitely grew it out of a very tiny seed, you know?
But, dude,
I really enjoyed it. I loved like the opening, like from the beginning, it just felt a little different. It reminded me a lot of Star Wars. So it started giving me those great feelings that I used to have, but it also gave me some new stuff. So, you know, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I had a really good time with it. Or as good a time as one can have in a pretty dark movie. But I it didn't feel so much Star Wars. It felt really modern to me, which I liked. And you know, I really enjoyed it. I've got lots of things to say, because I was around my house a lot this weekend, and TBS has been playing the six other movies.
Yes.
I went to heavy rotation.
The restaurant that I went to after I saw it the first time I caught the end of Phantom Menace and beginning of Attack of the Clones.
Poor bastard.
I thought it was really cool to compare it in a way, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Comparing both to that, and like, I didn't realize, just thinking of that as in terms of, you know, Star Wars or A New Hope, however we want to, whichever name we want to use.
Sure.
I didn't realize that, like, I mean, it creates, and we'll get into the spoilers, I think it creates one sort of weird plot point in, a wonky plot point in Star Wars, but really the entire story of this movie is contained in the opening scrawl. Of A New Hope. It is like the opening scroll literally tells this story.
Because it just says that, you know, that they've struck, you know, basically the rebels have struck their blow against the Alliance, and now they're on the run.
Yeah, exactly.
They've stolen the plans, and now they're on the run, and then there we are.
The little
plot point, of course, is that Leia is a terrible, terrible liar. as is Captain Antilles and everyone else on that ship. They are really bad liars.
Especially because they're walking away from that and they're like, "Oh, hey, it's a diplomatic mission, man."
Yeah, exactly.
That's like, that'd be like literally, you know, like you like standing in front of a broken window with a brick, you know, and well, you know, like, I just found this here.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. It's funny because I was thinking, well, I obviously have a lot of thoughts about this movie. First of all, I was nervous going into it because, you know, the rumors that the sort of like Disney executives had seen the film like over the summer, or seen like a work print or something, and had decided to sort of like reshoot almost like over half the movie because the rumor was that it was slightly too dark. And
wow, what did they see?
Well, I've got some theories. I've got some theories to that, and I would actually really like to see that cut now, having seen this movie. And the last time, I didn't realize that it was Gareth Edwards that was directing this for the longest time. And the last time we talked about a Gareth Edwards movie, I pretty
much
Godzilla, and I used the F word liberally. Like, I hated that Godzilla movie. I didn't.
Oh,
I severely disliked that Godzilla movie, and so I was very nervous. So top it off to hear like rumors that wow, they had to reshoot like large chunks of this movie because, you know, the Disney execs weren't, or Lucasfilm or whoever, whatever executives on high weren't happy with it. I was very nervous going into it. So, and then, you know, to top it off, it's like, you know, I started hearing these rumors that it's really violent, really dark, and I wanted to take my kid, and I had to make an effort to go see it like the night before. I was going to go see it with my family just to make sure it was okay. And so, I mean, it's interesting.
It's cool
did you wind up taking the family?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. It's okay, really funny because I asked Jay to let me know what he thought, and he thought it might have been a little too much. But it's really interesting because, you know, I asked, is it more sort of like Temple of Doom? Temple of Doom. That's the new Lucasfilm. Temple of Doom.
That's the Scooby-Doo.
Exactly. Yeah. The Temple of Doom PG-13, or is it sort of like Ant-Man PG-13? And I guess like the misunderstanding is like, you know, Temple of Doom, the big famous scene is like when they reach into the guy's chest and pull out the heart. Like, that's sort of like the intensity that I'm talking about. Like, this movie is dark, but there's no real blood. There's no real gore.
Yeah, it's not like an intense thing, but it's a definite consistent like beating down. There is a definite like, you know, under the gun, you know, sort of like feel on the whole thing, which is part of, I think, part of the genre that they tackle too, since it's sort of a heist, you know, slash mission movie.
But at the same time, I mean. What's
that? I mean, it's a heist war. It's a war heist movie.
Yeah.
And all that's cool. I mean, the reason I put it more in the Temple of Doom, they all die.
Well, yeah.
Like, pretty terribly.
Yeah.
Cassian shoots a guy cold-bloodedly in the back. There's no, like, Greedo shot first. He shoots a guy who's...
No, yeah, exactly. He's not in the wall.
Back.
You just stay in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that last sequence with Vader... cool as it is is maybe the single most violent thing I've ever seen in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, well, except for getting his hand cut off. I mean, that's pretty violent.
Even more than that, he pins a guy to the roof and then slashes him open with a lightsaber.
Yeah, like, well, but you don't see blood. Like, I remember with Luke, like, there's a definite different, I mean, I get what you guys are talking about, but so first of all, I have to say that I did like the movie. I mean, I liked it. I can't say that I loved it, but I had a good time. I enjoyed it. There were certain aspects of it that I really dug, but I did not have a lot of fun watching it. Like, I was not sort of like on the edge of my seat. I was not like hooting and hollering. I was not like, you know, laughing or anything. I was just like, for me, it was very much like an even keel, and it's really interesting because it does play into that, what you're talking about, Jay, which and Paul, you know, you're saying like it's kind of like a slow sort of like beat down on the characters. But the thing is like I never grew fully empathetic with the characters. Like I got their situation. They had moments where I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of nice. But there was never a moment where I just fell in love with everyone, where I just was dying for them to succeed. And I was sort of like biting my nails.
Dude,
like,
I'm sorry,
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that?
Dude, space is Atuichi.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even he wasn't that effective to me.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I liked him. I really dug Space Zatoichi and Sidekick. I would watch a movie about that like all day long.
Yep. You mean the dude with the vacuum cleaner on his back? I thought the design of that was like horrible. I was just like, why? He's got this awesome space Gatling gun, and it looks like he just pulled out like a Dyson, you know, or
a shop
you know.
Vac. It's a shop vac.
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me. I mean,
dude, you got to throw the cosplayers something cheap once in a while.
No, I mean, that's the thing is that I very much was like, I mean, there's so much spectacle. I mean, there's just so much beautiful stuff to look at. There's so many beautiful thoughts, but I mean, so many beautiful things to see. But, you know, in the end, you know, and, you know, Jay already spoiled it. Obviously, we're spoiling stuff. You know, everybody dies. And I'm a softie, guys. Like, I'm like the guy that cries in the movies. Like, I went to go see the Peanuts movie, and that movie made me cry. Like, I was a weeping fool during the whole thing. And this movie, everybody dies, and I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. But and even to go even a step further, my kid didn't cry. Like, my kid has seen movies where people die, and she was not, like, upset. She was not, like, she was like, it sucks that they all died, like, after the movie ends, but I should be weeping. Like, I should be like, and this is what I think may have changed during the original cut to the next cut, that maybe there's a level of emotional involvement that might have been pulled back on, you know, because if at the end of the movie you're like heavily invested in them and they all die, like, that's a blow. That's like a serious blow. And I feel like that is not a blow that, like, okay, like the Wild Bunch, the Magnificent Seven. We just talked about the Magnificent Seven like a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, at the end of those movies, when those guys die, you're like, that is jacked up, you know? And in this moment, I was like, okay. You know, and I just didn't feel like each character had its distinct moment to shine. Like, there was no, like what's his face? The captain, Cassian? Cassian
Diego, Andrew? Yeah. Diego Luna, yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like, is that guy the leader? Is she the leader? Who's the leader of this band? Like in movies like this, there's always, like, the Yul Brynner, you know, character who, like, everyone kind of rallies around. And she kind of develops into that, but not really. So there were definitely flaws in the building of character that I felt, where I was like, by the end of the movie, I should have been like, wow, this is messed up. And the only thing I felt messed up about was those poor guys getting slaughtered by Darth Vader at the end of the movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting because I noticed one of the second time I watched it that she gets these two, like, she gets the St. Crispin Day speeches, you know?
Yeah.
And she gets two of them sort of like back to back almost, you know? She gets one of them, you know, to in front of like the whole Rebel Alliance, and then she gives another one to the guys on the ship, you know, before they land. And the second one's not anywhere close to the intensity of the first one.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, I see how there are some things that do sort of take away from, you know, what could have been.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I also felt, and again, I like the movie, but I'm definitely the type of person that sort of picks things apart, especially when I'm like, why didn't I like this more? You know what I mean? Because this is obviously stuff that's up my alley, like space opera. You know, I felt the writing was very repetitive, just like you said, Paul. Like, I feel like in the beginning of the movie, what's his face? Cassian meets this guy in an alleyway, and then he shoots him in the back, and they basically talk about the pilot, that the Empire's looking for a pilot, like, what's going on? And then they meet, what's her face, Felicity Jones, Jin, and they're basically explaining the same exact information that they explained like two scenes ago. And I'm like, you guys could have cut that scene out where he's meeting the guy in the alleyway. I guess the only reason that you established that was to sort of maybe plant a seed that this guy's ruthless. But, and then I also felt like there were some flaws in like turns or surprises that you could have had, because Cassio, like, they're at the
Cassio,
base.
Cassio, nice.
Cassio, is that his name? Cassian?
Cassian. But I actually love Cassio better.
Cassian. I am misspeaking a lot. It is the holidays. I am tired.
It's Star Wars names too, bro.
Yeah.
But, you know, right. I wish that they had something though as like sort of easy and rolling off the tongue as Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
at least somebody had a name, you know, similar to that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You know, it's just the other thing too was like they have this opportunity where Cassian, you know, is supposed to go assassinate her father, right? Mm-hmm. And they before they get on the ship, they have an officer pull him aside and be like, "You must execute him." And he doesn't make it back. And I'm like, wouldn't that have been more effective to discover like later on? Like he gets on the ship and it's like, what are you doing? Like the scene later on where she discovers like what he's all about and she reads him the riot act and she's like, "You're just like the Empire." She's like, "You're no better." Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And that would have been a much more effective scene if none of the audience had known like, oh, this guy's like a real scumbag. Like he meant to kill the dad and he could have screwed up the whole, you know, they could have saved him instead. So, and you know, not screwed up the whole plan, you know? So there was a lot of like things that I was like, this is repetitive. Why are we doing this? And there was also a feel of, I felt the flow was off. You know, I felt that the movie felt a little disjointed, particularly the scenes with Forrest Whitaker, where I was just like, you know, like
those scenes are a mess. I like the character. I like that, that part of the world and what they're trying to do. But I felt like
the torture scene.
Yeah.
The torture scene like with like the weird Cthulhu monster. I mean, what was that about?
And there's no result because he literally says to the pilot, he says like, "Oh, this will destroy your mind." And like, he's okay as far as I can tell, like in the next
it takes a little while to talk him into reality, you know, but and also it wasn't necessary. I mean, it's like the guy walked in with like all this like information. It's like, "Hey, I'm giving this up. I've got all," you know, it just really wasn't necessary. It just was an odd scene.
They didn't do anything to build any sense of Bodhi being untrustworthy for that to sort of matter. You know what I mean? Like we at no point, this goes back to Christian's larger point, which is true. It moves so quickly. And like the first act especially is so disjointed and all over the map. I think they jump to like three different planets in like two different time frames.
Yeah,
sure.
In like the first, you know, 5 minutes.
Yeah. I actually think that was kind of funny too, because there is a moment, you know, like, you know, after like she sees the hologram and everything and it's all blown up and, you know, they're going, she's just like, "Well, everything happened so fast." And it's like, yeah, you're right. You know, like this.
Yeah.
It does.
It really did.
It's interesting because it's a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. Too. It felt long to me.
It didn't feel long to me.
Oh, it did.
It definitely didn't feel long. It didn't drag. For me, the highlights, you know, the stuff that like I really dug is certainly that, you know, that great little like Western style beginning where you're like really see like old school like Kurosawa influence again, you know. That's kind of the cool thing about it, is that it sort of dragged like it back to like those Westerns and samurai movies that like, you know, the original one was sort of ripped off homage to,
influenced by.
It was cool to see that again, you know, like that was missing from, you know, from all of the prequels, you know, like you just didn't get that feel at all.
The
rundown world.
Yeah. And also even like, just like the depth of like field, you know, like you're basically using, I had to read up about it, of course, too, because like, you know, you're using like vintage, like anamorphic lenses and things now, you know, with these new digital cameras that like just really give you like more of a feel, more of the feel of like New Hope, you know, and how that looked. And I that was really nice to see again.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it definitely looks more like New Hope than any of the other movies at all, certainly than any of the prequels, which is a weird conscious choice that George Lucas made, but it's a terrible one and he should not have made it. And I like the look of it, and that's the stuff that I like. The look, I like the feel, I like the bits of the world that we were seeing that we hadn't seen before, and the sort of nuts and bolts of it. Like, I loved spending time in Jeddah. And the idea that like, oh, So it's powered by the same kind of crystals that power lightsabers.
Right.
And so they've got to mine them somewhere. And, like, again, getting the sense of, like, okay, the Empire is actually a functioning government, and this is how this world works. And that I really dug.
And I like the fact that they almost sort of come across, like, it's almost just like a really mean-spirited, like, pissing on the Jedis, in a way, kind of thing. You know, that, like, that it's like, we're going to take everything you did, and we're going to turn it into the worst weapon that anyone's ever seen. I mean, it's like, that's honestly, like, the evil in this movie was really believable. Like, that dude, the main, Krennic. He's a very believable villain.
He was really good.
At first I was thinking, he might be this man. It's because he's so, like, bureaucratic and so like sycophantic and such a suck up for the Emperor. You know, it's just like, what, like, the way people treat power in this movie and the way, like, you see people going about it. It's like, wow, that's so believable. He's one of the most interesting villains in the Star Wars, you know, legacy. And then let's talk about that Grand Moff Tarkin, man.
That was a weird moment.
It was really creepy. There were definitely moments where the eyes were off, where I was like, ooh, that is not. But then, like, when he first showed up, I was like, wait a minute. I was like, he's dead, right? Like, that guy's he's been dead a long time. Like, what are we doing? Like you know, and then
First of all, it's awesome. Peter Cushing is immortal now.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's kind of gross in my opinion, but anyway, yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of odd and weird. He looked almost like a design off of, like, the TV universe, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It felt like almost like a deliberate thing to not match him.
You know,
I don't know.
Well, you know what I felt? There was a lot of, like, like, old school, like, sort of like Disneyland animatronics to the face. It was like weird. Like the really good stuff. Like, if you go to Disneyland and you go to the Abe Lincoln thing, and they have probably what was the most sophisticated thing at the time. You know, it felt like there were scenes where it felt like that when you could tell. Yeah. You know, which there were definitely moments where I was like, damn, they did an amazing job. But then there were other scenes.
I think what totally sold it, though, was the performance on the other end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. Everyone treated it so real. But even when they cut away from, you know, from Grand Moff Tarkin's face to then Krennic's face, you're like, oh, yeah, this, I can tell which of these is a real living human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is just so weird. Yeah, and then of course, I mean, like, the big spoiler, I guess, would be the reappearance of Leia at the very end.
Oh yeah, and that one
was creepy the first time, but the second time it didn't bother me quite as much. I think
probably because you were expecting it.
I was expecting it, but also, like, I think what really threw me off about the first one was, like, that they actually do a long, almost deliberate hold on her face during that, you know, she delivers the line, and then instead of everything moving along like it's been doing, you just hold on it.
Yeah.
And you're looking, so you're actually forced to sort of look at it and see the effect and then see through the effect. And then, you know, and then the second time it just, it didn't bother me the as much as it did the first time. The first time it was just weird, and it was kind of odd to end the movie on a note that felt so weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. When it happened, I was like, again, I was sort of like, they did a good job, and then they held on it for a while, and I was like, don't hold any longer. And then that's when they, like, let go of it. But I agree with you. I think they should have let go of me, like, maybe 2 seconds ago, because I think the audience registered it. I think they were worried that the audience wouldn't register it right away, you know, that maybe it needed a little more time. But I do agree with you. I think they should have like cut way earlier. The one thing that I really wanted to talk about that I really liked is that for the first time in a movie, they did a scene where a character sort of runs into their father figure again, which is Felicity Jones and Forrest Whitaker, and they haven't seen each other in years. And Paul knows what I'm going to talk about because the Tron sequel, you know, they do the guy meets what's his face?
Jeff Bridges.
Yes. And it's just like, dad? And he thinks his dad has been dead for years. And it's just sort of like, eh, you know, whatever. Like,
hey, man, how you been?
Yeah, exactly. It's totally the Big Lebowski, like, hey, man, like, that's your problem. That's your opinion, man. I didn't abandon you. You know what I mean? And it just falls flat on its ass. But this one, like, when Felicity runs into Forrest Whitaker, even though it is kind of like a clunky sort of setup, the scene played really well for me. Like, I was like, oh, finally, the scene where somebody, like, you know, meets the father figure that they feel abandoned them, you know, it just played really well. It was the one moment of like heart that I just that I tacked on to, you know. But then sort of like the opposite of that is when she sees the recording of her dad. And Mads Mikkelsen is sort of like rushing through that speech. You know, he's talking about his daughter.
They threw a whole bunch of exposition into poor Mads.
So much exposition. And it's just, and I feel like this is what, just coming back to sort of that original point, Nerdist, and I think other places have done this, have done a lot to talk about the differences between the first teaser trailer the version of the movie that we actually saw.
Yeah, they got rid of the best line in the whole movie where they go, you're a rebel, I rebel, right? And I was rebel. Like, where's that line? It was a great line. Just,
exactly. I feel like there's like huge chunks of this movie that maybe it was, I don't know that it was like they wanted to Disney-fy it. I think that they like, or I guess maybe you're right, that like they wanted to make it
more palatable sort of more, to a younger audience, I think.
Palatable or clearer earlier that all these people are going to die.
Yeah.
So don't get too invested. Yeah. Because I feel like there are things like his, like the recording that he makes, he starts off talking to Saw and then is...
Then suddenly he's talking to his daughter, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I felt like that's just one of those things where they're like, this is the best we can do. Like, we can't reshoot all of this. We're just going to re-edit what we have to, like, make it work.
That's interesting.
There's one weird little point that that came up with. It actually came up in that scene, the one that you were talking about, Christian. She's like, when he left, I was 16, and then later, you know, Cassian's like, you know, when I was just 6 years old. Years on which planet did they go by?
That's a good question.
It's Star Wars. It's
it was just really interesting because I think this is the first one in a while where they've sort of thrown in like sort of a standard American or you know sort of usage of measurement. Yeah. You know, like they went through like and took great care to wipe out the alphabet from you know the original movie to replace it with you know, the Star Wars language and everything. And then for them to start dropping like things about years and things like, I thought that was an interesting thing.
Right. But then again, like time and relativistic effects,
I
wound up watching a bit of Attack of the Clones and I realized something that had never struck me before that like Anakin and Obi-Wan leave Coruscant on their like separate missions where Obi-Wan is going to find out the cloners.
Sure.
And Anakin is going to Naboo.
Right.
And then it seems like Anakin is on Naboo for like 3 weeks.
Right.
Hanging around.
Yeah.
Whereas it definitely seems like Obi-Wan is on whatever on Kamino for maybe 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Like
right.
He gets, yeah. And I was like, but somehow I was like, wait, how does this, what? Yeah. Oh my God. Watching the prequels. Ugh. Like now I watched large chunks over the weekend.
Yeah.
One, they are so terrible. Watching them after Force Awakens and then after this, and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
What were you thinking, dude?
It's so funny because it's not even a function of effects. It's totally a function of like, of story and just like acting and just it's just like how badly out of his league was George Lucas when he made those three movies. It's just it's horrifying.
I mean, it's so interesting. I was just looking at them in that restaurant with the sound off.
Yeah.
And noticing how flat and like TV, like the image quality, you know, it's just like it's like there was just no depth and it just it's shocking.
Yeah, it really is shocking.
What bummed me out this time, like watching particularly Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, is that I can see what he's going for.
Yeah.
And I can see the parts that like, oh, this would have been so much more interesting, but he just couldn't get there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like his weird instinct to make things cute and easy just overwhelms like everything.
Well, see, that's going like, to lead me.
There's such complicated stuff.
Yeah, that's going to lead me to the point of my next sort of point, which I want to bring up, which kind of goes back to the Mads Mikkelsen scene where he sort of confesses the whole plot and it's a little bit flat, like the delivery, because like this is supposed to be a passionate speech to his daughter. But as somebody who has lost a parent when they were younger, like that scene sort of was very much like sort of the ultimate, it plays like the ultimate wish fulfillment fantasy, like right when the character needed it. And it just, to me, it comes across like a little convenient, like the way he's delivering it. He's like, I love you, Jin. You're my most beautiful star.
You're my stardust.
Yeah, stardust, you know, and you are the greatest thing in my life. And oh, by the way, this is my plan. You know what I mean? It's just, it feels like so like,
this is, that's the part that made it feel like a Disney movie.
Yeah, and this
like
is
it's what, and that's the definite, and that's something new to the series.
Yeah, and and it's very much sort of like it was very much on the nose, and so I felt this way about a lot of things that happen in the movie. Like, oh, this is the perfect time for this to happen. Like, especially when Chirrut dies and like all the death scenes, like when the robot's getting blown away, K2SO yeah, he is being blown away, and that scene to me, it definitely seemed like cut oh, pull it back because I feel like there's a version of that like where he's
that's
really
way more
getting
intense,
hammered
for
and he's dying. But I also feel like I felt like when you got to that moment in the movie and then the first guy dies and then you get the feeling, you know, Cassian falls down and I'm like, oh, this is the moment where everyone dies. You know what I mean? Like this is the very sort of typical moment in these caper movies where the cast, maybe save one or two, get like wiped out. And it just felt like so on the nose. It felt almost timed to me where I was like, oh, okay. Like, and just so many like little plot points like that and structure areas, you know, I don't know what the technical term for them are, is just seemed like this is okay. We're here now. Let's do it. You know what I mean? And I could I could almost feel it happening. And once it started kicking in, I definitely sort of became a bit removed from the plot. You know what I mean? It wasn't sort of like something that was sprung on me and that sort of emotionally affected me. Because, you know, let me tell you something. In any other movie that pulls it off really well, the scene from sort of like the dead dad or whatever, that's going to have me in tears. Like, I'm going to be like, oh my God, she got to talk to her dad. Like, that's so beautiful. And that just didn't happen here. You know,
and so, even in a movie where you've got like, you know, a cast like this with like a high body count and not everybody, you know, like say something like, you know, Hateful Eight or, you know, something like that, you know,
I have not seen yet. Oh, I got to see Hateful Eight.
Oh, so much fun.
you'll enjoy. Sure. But you know, it's just like, you know, there is a weight to the characters passing that they were aiming for here that they didn't quite get.
And that's what I think the reshoots might have addressed. I don't know, man. Like, it's kind of messed up for me to think, like, hey, they might have pulled back on, like, empathetic storylines or something that was, like, a little too hardcore happening to the characters. But, you know, I mean, when Han Solo bit it at the end, towards the end of,
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens, though, that was that felt real.
Yeah, that felt like really powerful, and the emotions that surrounded all the characters, you know, felt really powerful, and you know the struggle that you know Kylo Ren is sort of going through. Like I felt that. I didn't feel that emotion in this movie. It just lacked that weight. Like the adventure part of it, like I was into it. Like I was like all the ships flying around and like we've got to go do this and stuff like that. But I didn't feel like honestly there were times where I just didn't feel like tension building. You know where I'm like, are they going to get out of this? Like oh, what's happening in the caper? It didn't grab me by the throat like that. You know there were just it was more the sort of world building and. And, you know, space opera stuff that I tacked on to more that that sort of made me really like the movie. But as far as like by the end of the movie, you know, when things were happening to characters, I just wasn't like maybe the robot was the only one I sort of cared about. Like when he almost got shot by accident and he's like, did you know that was me? And, like I was like, oh, man, she shot the robot. Yeah. I mean, it was a great, great little moment. So, I mean, the thing is like, but it is a great time at the movies. I mean, I've seen it twice. Yeah. There's almost a part of me that would be open to seeing it like a third, even a fourth time, because the spectacle is so amazing that the battle at the end, the space battle, is just like outstanding stuff. Great. You know,
yeah, this is by far the best action in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You
know. I gotta wonder because Christian, I didn't listen to your podcast on the Godzilla movie, but I'm sure we overlap, and I've gotta wonder if they actually may have added more action. In some ways to this movie than he meant originally, because my biggest issue, one of my big issues with the Godzilla movie is that like every time for like the first half, more than the first half of the movie, like two-thirds of the way of the movie, it was like, here's Godzilla, but I'm not actually going to show you what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it.
Yep. You hear you got to spend more time with Aaron Taylor Johnson around.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was more of that, if there were like more long scenes of people talking.
Could be.
That Disney was like, this is a Star Wars movie. You're going to need to actually put some Star Wars in your Star Wars movie. And the unfortunately, it was sacrificed was particularly Jin's character and little character moments that didn't quite add up. I still invested more than you did. I mean, I was particularly like Paul said in Chirrut and his buddy with the bake or whatever with the vacuum cleaner. Like I was totally in on those two guys.
Yeah, I want to watch like a series of those movies. Those dudes.
Oh my god!
Right there,
I would totally do. I would be so in for that. K2SO as well. Totally down for that dude.
Oh, I was just talking to my daughter at lunch because I bought the K2SO like die-cast figure over the weekend. I was like, if they made a movie out of just this guy, like I would go see that because it was such a beautifully designed character. Like that. Yeah, when I saw that robot. I was.
He was a little bit from what's the video game, the old one that they did. There was a character that was similar to this. On Knights of the Old Republic had like an Imperial assassin droid that sort of had like a sardonic sense of humor. And like that sort of reminded me of that. But yeah, K2SO is probably comes off the best out of any character there other than Darth Vader.
Well,
you know?
there was a part where, I mean, there is a part to Kate, like I love the physical design of the robot.
Yeah.
The personality, I was like, come on guys, do we really have to have like another C-3PO? I mean, he just felt like a little too C-3PO-y to me. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he's C-3PO if C-3PO were programmed by a psychopath.
I guess so.
Or depressive. Like it's even more, even less like even just more depressive.
Yeah. Right. A little like Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide. Yeah,
a little bit. He reminded me also, and I do think there are some parts of it that owe a debt to the Darth Vader comics.
Yeah.
Because there's a C-3PO, a protocol droid, who's actually super, I forget his designation, but he is super bloodthirsty.
Oh, interesting.
Like, he enjoys flaying people. in the comic books, and a lot of what K2SO did reminded me of that character.
Yeah. I think Darth Vader came. They went to the Darth Vader comic books a lot. For their Darth Vader here. I mean, come on, dude. First of all, Castle Vader, rad.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, so right. Rad.
You know,
so rad.
The design, just the design of like that whole setup, and like the whole thing of him just like waiting in this, you know, tank to try to ease his pain. Oh. You know, yeah, yeah. What, until he's summoned by somebody who needs him. You know, it's like he just goes here and like shuts himself off from everything. You know, it's just this really was creepy, and even like that little like. That little sense of humor, you know, that comes underneath him, like that, and it's always like that sort of, you know, it's almost like he's got like a master apprentice relationship with the, you know, with the critic, or you know, like, you know, there's a lot of like people, you know, the people just sort of playing off of each other here, you know. I really enjoyed all the Imperial stuff like a lot more.
Oh, so much.
Me too. This is the first movie where I felt like this is the Empire. Like, this is the first movie where I felt like, oh, these guys are badass. You know what I mean? Like, I love the first three movies. I've never been scared of Darth Vader before. Like, I don't think, like, even as a kid, like, he ever scared me. I mean, I knew, like, you knew that was the bad guy. He's dressed in all black. You know, he's not a nice guy. He kind of chokes people out. You know, he's not scared to choke a bitch out, you know, with his force powers. But this is the first time that I felt like we were really getting, like, an inner workings of the Empire. Like, what their deal was, what they were all about, how oppressive it is to live under the Empire. Like, this is the first time, like, I felt like... I will say this about the movie, is that this is definitely the first time that I felt like the weight of the Empire in a movie or in anything sort of Star Wars, outside of, like, Star Wars Rebels, you know, like, where you just felt like... Man, stuff is going down, and it's really bad, and these guys are really evil, you know? And I don't think I'd always felt like the Empire in the original movies and in almost anything else was sort of like cardboard cutout villains, you know what I mean? Sort of like not a lot of real depth to them. They're just bad, you know? But this was the first time that I actually felt like they sort of like had cast their shadow across the galaxy and people were being oppressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I dug the rebel stuff too. I mean, like the little infighting and the factions between all of that. I mean,
that
almost makes it better too. Like knowing like how close they were to just like completely falling apart before their greatest victory, you know. You know, that was a really neat touch.
If there's anything I wanted more of that. Like, I was excited. I was so excited when they were like, oh, Saw Gerrera's a fanatic. I was like, whoa,
that's
interesting. If there's like arguments about what's the best way to go and how, like, that's kind of cool.
And
you know, watching those people like, you know, attack the Empire on Jeddah was such a neat little sequence too.
It did. This movie did commit sort of like my one big mortal sin, which is when the Death Star. First of all, that's the other a little nitpick I have. You've got hyperdrives. You've got space flight. Nobody's ever heard of an atom bomb. Like, the atom bomb doesn't exist. There's no nuclear explosion. Nobody's ever heard of a city being blown up by anything. Okay, whatever. I'll go with it. But then there's sort of like outracing the explosion thing. That stuff drives me nuts. If I see that in a movie, I check out. Like, it happened in the Avengers, and I almost was like, oh man, this movie's gonna suck. Like, in the first, like, when the base blows up and they're like driving away from the explosion. And that, in this, like, I was like, kind of more like, okay, it looks so cool. Like, you know what I mean?
It does,
like,
look really cool.
I did not, I didn't have as much of a problem with it as it did when it first started. And I was like, are they going to outrace the explosion? Are they really going to outrace the explosion? They're going to outrace the explosion. And I just, like, that is my big pet peeve in movies. And the other giant pet peeve is when somebody sort of dies and somebody's giving them CPR and they're like, don't you die on me. And they're pounding on the chest, and it seems like the person's gonna die, and then somebody just, and then the person that seems like they're dead, like a couple of beats go by, and then they're like, you know, they come back to life. That drives me crazy. Those are my two. If you want to piss me off in a movie, you do those two things, and I'm like The Abyss. I still that was the moment.
Oh my god! Yeah, that,
and I was like, I hate this movie.
Fight. You never gave up anything in your life.
It's horrible. It's just the most corny thing. You know what I mean?
You want me to make it better for you? I can redeem The Abyss a little bit for you on that
sure,
one.
Sure, why not?
Having read the novelization of The Abyss, which is a great book.
Really?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Oh. Written by Orson Scott Card. And to his credit, rather than just working from the script, he was actually on set and was doing edits to the book as they were making the movie. So it's really close to the actual movie.
Oh, wow.
And then in the end, he basically explains a bunch of things that are really dumb at the end of that movie and makes them better. Oh. And one of those things that the aliens actually revived her. That, you can't see them. They're underneath. And the aliens actually made it happen.
Well, that's good. Because
so there you go. Isn't
that
better?
As a kid, that was the first time it happened that I saw. And I was like, I hate this. And I'm going to hate it forever. Don't ever do this stuff again. You know. So, but yeah, they did do the racing against
responsible. Is Cameron actually responsible there for that particular little
He is definitely responsible for that. So obviously he's an effective filmmaker one way or the other. There's definitely, the racing of the explosion. I mean, there's nothing in this movie where I was like, I hate this. You know what I mean? There's just some sort of flow or feel that just didn't blow my mind. And I wanted my mind to be blown. And the other thing too that I felt towards the end with the space battle, I think the space battle drags on a little too long. You start becoming a little desensitized to all the ships flying around. I definitely felt after a while, I was like, okay, I get it. You guys are flying around each other. Can we move forward with this? You know what I mean? There's definitely, maybe it was sort of an impatience that I was feeling. I don't know. But I definitely felt towards the end, as that battle was going on, I definitely got a little bit of can we wrap this up and mm-hmm. get to the point, please? Because a lot of that stuff for me is just spectacle. I appreciate it. It shows up. It's great. But if it goes on for too long, then I get bored because the surprise is gone. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Yeah. No, I get you. But I when they crash the two
Star
Destroyers into each other, I'm like, I don't care. That was so freaking awesome. That was just the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
And they made it look so not exactly real. Which is sort of a bummer, but it looked like physical models.
It did look like models.
They all look like models,
especially with the lighting. How they light the ships this time because they noticed almost all the ships when they were introduced, they were in some sort of shadow.
Yep.
You know, going into a bright light, which made it look mm-hmm. very sort of plasticky and very like those models that they used for the first one, which was really cool.
I wonder if that was intentional. I mean, it must have been intentional.
I think so. I mean, one of the things, that was completely successful about this is that I think that it works the best as a transition movie because it mm-hmm. ties in the look and feel of Rebels with the look and feel of the prequels with the look and feel of the classic trilogy. You know what I mean?
He
was really using a lot. He was tying together a lot of things here. And I mean, really successful. I was a little worried after Godzilla 2, because I mean, I dug Monsters. Monsters was really
Monsters was good
movie. And then Godzilla was so awful for me that
it was so terrible.
I was so nervous. Ugh.
I was nervous about this one, but literally I think in the first minute or so of the movie, basically when I saw the farm there in Mads Mikkelsen doing the walking out by himself to the stormtroopers coming out of it, and it was set up like a Sergio Leone shot and everything, I was like, you know what, we're in good hands here. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And that scene's actually really good. Ben Mendelsohn is great. Like the great understated menace of that scene is so well done. Like his so like obviously fake, sincere reaction to hearing his wife say, he's like, oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew, well, he knows he's terrible. Lying. Yeah,
go,
yeah.
I know. That's what go get. I'm like,
really excited. This movie made me really excited for Ready Player One. I hate to say because I know Ben Mendelsohn's playing the villain in
is he?
Playing Nolan Sorrento in there. And also the second unit, basically the action director of photography is the same on this movie and on Ready Player One also. I mean, there's a lot of overlap going on between a lot of these projects and things like that. And it's cool. I mean, I this was some of the best spectacle I've seen like on the big
screen. I will give it that. And then all the little Easter eggs too, like all the little, like I love, like basically like, you definitely got a lot of, there was a lot of Empire Strikes Back sort of like homages in there. Mm-hmm. Like Cassian is wearing, when they go to Jedha, he's wearing a coat that looks almost exactly like the coat that Han Solo wears when he's riding the Tauntaun. And there's a scene where he walks around the corner and he's talking to Jin, and that sort of like drone that shoot in the beginning of Empire, the black drone, floats in the background. Like he's walking around the corner and he's talking to Jin and he's wearing that coat, and it's just like basic, that winter sort of coat, which is like, why are you wearing that hooded winter coat? But whatever.
It's cold in the desert at night.
Yeah, it's true. But, and then that thing went floating by and I was like, oh, damn. Like even the backgrounds are like calling out, like, you know, I thought that was like really, really nice, you know. And Walrus Man and the other guy with the smushed up face.
The galaxy sort of felt big again, you know, like like you had all these different like factions and different like visitors from other planets on these things, mm-hmm. like that. And also, and the other thing too is that it maybe this made sense to other people, but for the first time, like the whole galactic travel thing made sense. It's like, oh, they're clear, like they're using these planets for their resources. Yeah. They're just like, it's all these different cultures that are spreading out and like using these different remote planets. And just like, you know, so you have like a planet that's a farm and you have all of these like really cool things. It's like, it felt good to get away from Tatooine.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Or Tatooine clones or stuff like that.
It really felt like a real world. Like when they were flying up, like all of them felt like this is an actual planet, not just a set. Like it was, they were like the two shorelines we were on felt like, oh, these are shorelines on a planet that is water and land. And that's fine. It looked like real places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, because going back to sort of the kyber crystals are making things feel like they're real. It's funny because, you know, they said the kyber crystal thing and it powers the Jedi's lightsabers. I was like, oh, I just thought that they just like lit up. Like I thought it was like the Force or something. And then and it's funny because it didn't seem like, like it didn't hit me like the midichlorians thing did in like the Phantom Menace. Like I remember when they started talking about that in the Phantom Menace, and I just started kind of like, my soul starts sinking into my stomach and I'm like sort of slumping down in my seat and I'm like, no, you're not doing this. You're
the kyber crystals were sort of a detail from the first novelization tie-in, Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Oh. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, they were after a kyber crystal in that story. So indirectly, he tied it into the story where Luke and Leia almost get it on.
The extended universe Disney's trying to ignore now, or Lucasfilm's trying to ignore. Like
but interesting that they are still drawing from those things. Like you're sort of taking a lot of like the best ideas out of the extended universe and sort of getting rid of a lot of the silly stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the best thing about this whole thing quite honestly. And my favorite thing about this and, say, Star Wars Rebels is that, quite honestly, we can still have the Star Wars universe, and I feel like it can still be compelling enough that I don't need to deal with Anakin anymore or C-3PO. Mm-hmm. I mean, they drop them in. It's like, haha, this is familiar. But at some point, I'm really, like... there is a part of me that it's like, it's time to move on from that. Like, I really want, like, that was sort of like the Force Awakens sort of weak spot with me, is that we kind of had to shoehorn in, like, the original characters a bit, and it seemed a little bit forced. Like, I really loved the introduction of all the new characters, you know what I mean? And, I that's the sort of thing that I want them to do, is move forward. And I think that was a lot what a lot of people were hoping, sort of like with the prequels, and we didn't get we didn't get like a whole new, like, interesting universe. But I think that this and Rebels has kind of shown us that, like, hey, it doesn't have to be all about the Skywalker clan, you know, we can do other things, you know. And that makes me happy, because, quite honestly, those prequels for me, they did a lot of damage that I still am not recovered from. Like, I still, like, there's a part of me, like, that hates Darth Vader just because that dork is in that armor, you know what I mean? And I can never get over that. I'm like, really? It's some, like, teeny bopper, like, just like a boy band reject, like, in there? Like, it's just, that was the most heartbreaking thing to me, like, of all time. And the prequels did a lot of damage. And I'm going to say that, you know, with The Force Awakens, Rebels, I think they were doing a little bit of triage with the Clone Wars cartoons, although I've never gone past the first season. But I feel like, for me, for somebody who walked away from it, because after that third movie, I was done. The moment that Darth Vader, like, stood up and was like, no, I was like, I'm done with you.
So terrible.
I was like, I literally was like in the theater and I was like, F you, I'm done. You just pissed on everything that I love and I am done. I gave you three shots and that's it. I'm done. But now I'm sort of like to the point where I'm like rediscovering that Star Wars fan in me again, you know? So, because I mean, like any other kid, I was nuts about it when I was a kid. And, you know, I remember when they announced the first prequel, I was like, I was so excited for that. And I remember us making fun of the Keanu Reeves movie, The Matrix, that was going to come out, and being like, that thing's going to suck. This new Star Wars movie is going to be awesome. And then it's just like how the universe surprises you, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I did like this movie. There are definitely things that I wanted more of, and more investment in the characters, more sort of camaraderie maybe between them. I know that it's sort of like it's sort of dumb to have like a romantic tryst between the two leads, but I felt like maybe that
there was definitely a missed connection between, because like from him to go from being so mistrustful of her to like being all in, there's just never a moment where like that makes sense.
It's like there was an adventure missing between Jeddah and and the rain planet where her dad was. Like, I felt like it felt like that was the chunk where everything was supposed to have changed and it didn't. Which is a bummer. Though I want to go on record as being glad there wasn't an actual romance. I'm like, we don't need that.
I know it's fine to just be buddies, but to me it would have been like, I don't know, that death at the end would have been even much more powerful, even like if it was an unrequited romance, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or even just going to the other extreme where they're kind of like sitting on the beach, they realize it's sort of the end, and then they just sort of like embrace each other. Like, that to me would have added
essentially what they did.
Yeah, I mean, they held hands and they were like, yeah, we're friends. But it just, if it had been more passionate, sort of the feeling between them, it sort of would have been more tragic, as opposed to like, yeah, we helped each other, we're buds. Hey,
I gotta
say
though, I'm a big fan of the way that ended, honestly, where he's holding her and you get that great, like, where they just blow it out, all that light, and the last thing you see is his open eye. yeah. right there. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was a gorgeous looking shot, and it yeah. transitioned like so beautifully into the next shot too. I'm yeah. Like that. you run a big chance of like losing your narrative when you kill off your main character and you still have yeah. like more time to go
yeah.
in your movie, you know? And they didn't do that. It really like, you know, jumped right in because, you know, like you're essentially that last, you know, few minutes where it throws you right up into the beginning of, you know, New Hope / Star Wars, you know, the, mm-hmm. the original, I really dug that part. You know, I actually thought the ending, it didn't grab me the first time, but the second time I watched it, I thought, wow, that was really a strong yeah. way to go.
Well, I think as a whole, quite honestly, the second time I watched it, it was much more sort of powerful all around. You know, I mm-hmm. think, and it's this thing that happened with The Force Awakens too, because, again, not to get too much into, the first time I saw Force Awakens, I was supposed to go see it with my family, and my daughter got really sick, and she made it to the movie theater and kind of threw up, and she didn't. She said that she didn't tell her mom that she was feeling sick because she didn't want to disappoint her dad. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? So I ended up seeing it by myself and obviously feeling kind of guilty and having all these feelings and whatever. And, you know, and then the Friday that I went to go see The Force Awakens, Rogue One, I had had a particularly bad day and I was just not feeling all together. So the second time it definitely hit me sort of, you know, in a much better way. I have a story about seeing the movie Howard's End that I'll tell you guys sometime that really taught me about like that mood when you, or that the things happening in your life can really affect the way that you see a movie, and it can change
sure.
the yeah. way that you feel about something. So it's really interesting. But I mean, I will say that that there is a part of me that I did like The Force Awakens slightly better than this. I mean, it's almost a tie because they are two different kinds of movies. But I felt like The Force Awakens was having a little bit more fun with what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, you know, I mean, I think that if you're going to go dark all the way, you know what I'm saying? Or go what? Really dark, or, you know, I don't know, maybe, but I felt like it just, it felt like a film that was really trying to balance itself and maintain that balance, but sort of sacrifice things to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Like I obviously like, I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed, it was appropriately dark. I wish there had been a more time spent to just build the characters. And I wish for whatever reason that the story wasn't quite so muddled, particularly in like the first act and the sort of middle chunk of the second act. It was a little like, wait, what? How did they get here?
Yeah.
But yeah, the visuals and like, and the performances, it's good. Again, this is something my buddy said about The Force Awakens, and it's just good to have us two Star Wars movies in a row where none of the actors actually suck.
Maybe
I don't fully buy what Forrest Whitaker was doing, but he's a great actor and those are still great scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that alone, because that has never been true, and so it's comfortable.
Apparently Forrest Whitaker's character is going to show up on Rebels, so that's awesome.
Yeah, he already appeared. I guess he already appeared on the Clone Wars. I didn't realize that he's
part of that world.
He was basically trained by I think Anakin or like somebody like in terms of like, but basically just trained to be like sort of an insurgent, you know, kind of thing. It's really, like I said, I enjoyed just how much it opened up this world. And like, I really, you know, it's cool. I got a lot of the same feelings I got from watching Star Wars, but it didn't feel nostalgic in the same way, you know. I think that, like, because they weren't trying to copy the exact tone, and it did feel modern. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it was a nice win. And like I said, I will watch Space Zatoichi movies, you know, to the end of time, should they decide to do so.
Well, I got to say, I got relatives visiting for the holidays, and everyone's like, oh, I haven't seen this new Star Wars movie. I'll be like, I'll go see it again, and I will buy it, buy the Blu-ray. I did enjoy it. There's just something that just didn't click all the way, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, I will be watching it again. I mean, if I can get 2.5 hours to go see it. But I don't know. I mean, I got to thank Disney, because like Disney, like really, like they brought this back, you know, they brought it back. Like, to me, it's like, I care about this stuff now. Like, where for years, like I did not, I was like, whatever, you still like that crap? I don't like it anymore. Like, you know, I couldn't have even cared less. So, you know, somebody, that's the one thing I wanted to say when you were just talking, Paul. I feel like these last two movies have had a real deference and respect for what's come before. You know, there's something in the prequels where you can tell that George Lucas is like, this is kind of silly, dopey, whatever. But I really feel like what they're doing now, like at Disney with like these two movies and Rebels, like has a real respect for the history that came before it, and kind of is like, well, some of it was dopey, but we can make it better, or we can go further now that we're sort of not being held back by Lucas's whims. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all in favor of what they're doing, and you know, we'll see what happens to the next Star Wars story too, you know. The next one should be even sort of further removed from, you know, the narrative that, you know, that takes place sort of the overall, you know, thing. You know, we'll see sort of what paths we end up going down.
I think it's going to be the Han Solo prequel movie. That might be awesome. Yep. Yeah, I don't know. They cast this guy. I don't know anything about him, but I'm sort of like, can we just CGI Harrison Ford with like young makeup and have him come back?
We've learned that we can.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Exactly. So I think we're all in favor of Rogue One, Star Wars story. We're sort of like at different levels of the spectrum. But I mean, in the end, I think we all really enjoyed it. I mean, for God's sake, I saw it twice, and I took it to my I took my family to go see it. So there's definitely something there that they're doing right at this point. And we'll see. I mean, what is it? Episode 8 next year?
Episode 8. Episode 8 next Christmas.
That's amazing.
Episode 8 next Christmas.
Awesome. Cool. Can't wait.
Star Wars movie every year. Forever and ever.
That one's actually going to have Skywalker in it. So I'm wondering how I'm going to feel about that. We'll see. Because I'm kind of done with the Skywalker family, guys. Like, I'm like, I need something else. Can we have like another family? It's a big universe. You know what I mean? Like, there must have been some other people. Anyway. Oh. All right. Well, this has been the Rogue One part-time fanboy episode. I am Christian Horn. I have been here with my friends Jay Holtham and Paul Edwards. Thank you for listening. And hopefully we will be back soon with another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Bye.